Hey, AfterBuzz TV, my name is Lauren LaGrasso. I am here with an amazingly talented woman. Her name is Chrissy Youngs. She's a singer-songwriter. She does it all. Stay tuned. You want to hear about this journey.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I'm lying horizontal, lost all of my feeling.
That's right. We're letting the buzz begin with a little bit of Under My Skin by the great Krista Youngs, everybody. Let's hear it. Woo! Chris, I'm so glad we finally made this work.
I'm so glad we did too.
Yeah.
This is, I've been looking forward to this for months.
Yeah, it literally
it
has
really
been
has
months.
Taken months.
So you've gotten a beautiful tooth jewel. What you call it?
It's a tooth diamond.
A tooth diamond. Okay. So for those of you who are audio based, Krista has a
diamond on my tooth.
A diamond. Is that a real diamond?
No, it's okay. A Swarovski crystal.
Oh, very
nice. But it's a
real
Swarovski crystal.
Very fanciful.
Yeah.
So a lot of changes have taken place, but that is definitely not the biggest one. You released this amazing song.
I did.
And this great video with a golden dancing man who I guess doubles as a drag queen sometimes.
His name is Laganja Estranja. He was on RuPaul's Drag Race, and he's become a really good friend of mine.
I love that.
And he was classically trained, and we wanted to do something different. So this is what we did.
I want to get to all of this and talk about the video in depth, but when I interview people, especially people that maybe the audience is just getting to know, I like to take it from the beginning.
Perfect. It's like a date.
It is. Oh my gosh.
We're on a date.
This is so special. So let's go back to little Krista Youngs, just like waltzing through Michigan. When did you... That's where she grew up, by the way.
I was running through Flint. Yeah, okay.
I would say it was an elegant waltz through Flint.
Yeah.
But when did you first start writing music? How old were you when this started happening?
I think I was probably like 8 or 9 and I just started writing poetry.
Wow.
And then I know that's so cliche because everybody says they do that.
No, actually, I ask a lot of people that, and you're the first person who said it started out in poetry.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, yeah, it did. And I am a Capricorn, so I love to know how things work. So when I was in middle school, I started reading books on the music business, and I was like, how do I do this? Like, how do I do this for a living? Because I just always wanted to sing, and I felt like I had a story to tell.
Wow. So you had the foresight when you were, what, like 12
yeah.
to do that? Where did that come from in you? Because obviously your parents aren't in the industry.
They're not. When I was 13, I started voice lessons. I was classically trained, and I knew that that's not what I wanted to do, but that was the only thing they had in Flint at the time, was
right.
classical voice. So I was like, okay, I'll do this, but I really want to do this. Let me learn more about this. So I just started reading books.
So where did you go to find these books? You just go to the library
yeah.
or Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, both,
Borders
actually.
Books?
Yeah, Borders.
Miss
I
it.
Love Borders.
Shout out, RIP.
I love bookstores. I still love bookstores. I know they're becoming obsolete, but yeah, I would go and just buy a bunch of books.
So if there's a kid sitting home in Michigan right now and they're like, I want to be part of the music industry. I don't want to sing classical music. What do I do? What are the top books you would recommend to them in this day and age to help them figure out how to start, you know, getting the little toe in the door?
I love Writing Better Lyrics by Pat Pattison, who's
okay.
a professor of mine at Berklee College of Music. And I didn't appreciate that book until after I graduated, but that's probably on my top list of books. And then there's another one, and I forget the title, but it's like The Billboard Guide to Writing Hits or something. That's a great book as well. And I find it really helpful to just watch people who are doing what I want to be doing, like interviews on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
Just reading articles about them and just kind of seeing how what their journey looked like.
Yeah. No, that is definitely a helpful thing because then you can start implementing pieces of it into
right.
your story.
And you find out their address and then you show
right.
up their
just
house and then you start
them.
Stalking them and you hold up signs.
It might work. You don't know. You don't know till you try it, folks.
I'm just kidding.
Go on, give it a
don't
try
do
with
that.
Me.
Don't stop.
No,
anybody.
Really. I could use a friend. I'm just kidding. So you did that when you're in middle school. So in high school, did you do a band? Like, what was the next step for you?
High school, I always hated musicals.
You did?
I did. Not that I hated them, but I didn't want to be
you
in
didn't,
them.
You knew you didn't want to do it.
Because I just don't remember lines.
Okay,
you know
so
I mean?
You just knew at that age, I'm not going to act,
I, was like,
I just want to sing.
Well, I like acting, I just don't want to act and sing and have it on a stage in front of people.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I was like, okay, I'll join choir, because that was the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined choir, and then I joined this, like, extra, like, school group thing. It was called the Treble Tones.
Oh, shoot, girl. Yes,
and we said, different things. But I was always the kind of person that wanted to, like, I was like, let's go get a gig at Borders for Christmas. So I would, like, make that happen. And I always wanted it to be more than it, like, was. And mm-hmm. I wanted it to be cooler than it was. And we had, like, a music production and engineering class in high school, too, and I took that. And it was awesome.
In high school?
In high school. It was, like, a new class, and, like, it was really cool. So between those things and, like, me just, like, writing on the piano and doing my thing and, like, I don't know. It was just a whole – I did things. I did all the things.
Yeah, and to have that kind of foresight as a kid. I mean, I was super into music and acting and, like, all kinds of performing arts growing up. But I didn't have the foresight to, like, start doing business about it. So you always had that business mind driving you, and I think that's so interesting.
I sold bracelets in high school. Wow. Remember those, like, bracelets that wrap around? I had the whole business. Like, you put beads on them and they're, yes, like, little slinky things. Uh-huh. And for months, I was, like, literally walking through the halls with, like, bank in my pocket. And I was like, yes. So, yeah, I always wanted to, like, I wanted to do music. But I also was, like, I am business-minded and I wanted to make money doing what I loved. And I really just didn't love high school. Like, I had a lot of friends, but I just didn't want to be there. I thought it was a colossal waste of my time. Not that I think school is bad.
No.
But I probably, if going back, I would have liked to have been homeschooled so I could have spent more time doing music.
Right.
So.
Yeah, because you see the kids out here who start at a young age, and just because they have that advantage of starting when they didn't have to be supporting themselves and, you know, going through the tribulations of young adulthood,
right,
they get further ahead because they have that earlier start.
Well, and I think it's important to know, like, to see in your kids the desire to want to do something so strongly,
mm-hmm,
and then helping them achieve that. Because a lot of kids that I went to high school with didn't know what they wanted to do. And a lot of my friends still don't know what they want to do with their life. But I was like, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do.
Did your parents support you in that?
Uh-huh.
That's awesome. Yeah. What advice would you give to parents who have a kid, they're like you, they're like getting gigs when they're 15, and they see what they're trying to achieve? How can they best support their child?
I think by learning more about the industry, by taking a class and, like, mm-hmm, really listening to your kid and, like, figuring out what they want to do and how you can help them do that. But I think knowledge is kind of the key, and learning more about the business that they want to get into. Even if it's just, like, a couple beginner classes, or, like, you take, like, a Berklee College of Music online class on the music business. Just something so you kind of know what you're getting yourself into.
Right. And you can help guide them.
And get a mentor. Like, yeah, if there's somebody in your city that does what you want to do, or somewhat does what you want to do. I think mentors are really important. And I didn't have one until I moved to LA.
So you went from Flint.
Yes.
To Berklee.
Yeah. No, I went. Yes.
Was that the trajectory?
Yes.
So straight there.
So Flint to Grand Blanc.
What was in Grand Blanc?
Well, I lived in Grand Blanc.
Oh.
We moved out of Flint when I was 8.
Oh, okay. Got it.
I still was raised in Flint, though. Yeah. But yeah.
Flint town.
Yeah. So yeah, Berklee. And then after Berklee, I went to Nashville for a year and a half. And then Nashville to LA.
So a lot of my friends who go to Berklee, I think it's an incredible school. Like, and the network you have, it's so great. But I notice a lot of them come out with a lot of scars. So, like, my friend Liz, she'll go into a writing session and be like, oh, I can't do that because of this and that and that. Do you think overall going – and a lot of people I know who didn't go to a music school say, like, oh, well, I didn't go because I didn't want to get in my head about it. Do you think the benefits of going to a music school outweigh the drawbacks?
For me, it did.
Yeah.
I'm just a very, like, I have to have everything organized in my head. And right. I learned the best that way, with structure. So going to Berklee was great because I didn't realize that, like, all of those things were available to me. And I learned a lot. I don't think, you know, I wouldn't have gone to Berklee for performance. I went for music business. And did I learn a lot about the music business? Kind of. But I learned more when I came out here.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think there's something to be said for finishing something that you start, like college. And that was... there was no talk about that in my house. Like, you had to finish college. You had to go and you had to finish. But when I applied, I applied to Berklee. And I knew I wanted to go to Berklee, and I got into Berklee. I didn't have a backup plan. That wasn't part of the deal.
So do you think, though, like, if there's a kid who's 18 years old in school, it's still better to go to school than to not go to school?
I think it depends.
You need to know yourself,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it depends. There are some people that I know that are really successful in the music business, and they never went to college, and it just wasn't right for them.
Right.
So I think, I mean, you know, like, you know in your gut.
Totally. You just got to listen.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard.
You just got to listen to that inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
The you really do. The inner voice is like, you know, you were supposed to be a stripper. Then you do that.
Go do it.
Go do it.
Stop holding yourself back. Live your dream. Your passion. So why did you decide initially to move to Nashville?
Because I was too scared to move to LA. And I knew people in Nashville. And I wanted to give myself a buffer, a year. It ended up being a year and a half of just going to Nashville and writing. Because before, when I lived in Boston, I didn't do a lot of co-writes. And then when I went to Nashville, because I was always just doing artist stuff in Boston. And then my my boyfriend at the time was like, you're really good at writing. Why don't you start writing for other people? And I'm like, I don't really want to do that, but okay. And then every day for like a year and a half, almost every day, I was in a session with somebody new. It was great. It was just me, another person, and a guitar, a piano. So I learned a lot in a year and a half, and I was in a like a duo, and we got on the radio, and it was really cool. And then at the end of that, I was like, cool, like Nashville's awesome, but it's not like, I didn't feel like home. Mm-hmm. So we packed up our stuff, and then we moved here.
And you moved here. So what was your first, like, bit of time in L.A. like?
Amazing.
Amazing?
Literally amazing.
What happened?
So my boyfriend and I, at the time, we were living together in Nashville, and then we broke up, and then we moved to L.A. together, which was...
Wait, you broke up, and then you moved to L.A. I love it.
Yeah, we're still really good friends, and, like, I love him. He was probably one of the most influential people in my life as far as, like... Because he's a producer, so he did my first album, and, like, he taught me a lot. So we moved to L.A. together, and we got separate places, and within the first week of me being in L.A., I got a phone call from the guy that was my mentor, DQ, and he was like, yo, I love this stuff that you've been posting on Facebook. Do you want to come in? I want to hear more of your songs, and I have projects and whatever. So I went and met him the first week I was in L.A., and it was just, that was it.
How did you know DQ?
I didn't. He actually went to Berkeley, and I requested him on Facebook, like friend requested him, and he was just looking at my page, and then he hit me up, and he was like, I really like what you do. And then from then on, I was just in with different artists and writing, and he introduced me like a ton of people, and I was doing sessions like, again, probably like 5 or 6 days a week for the first 3 or 4 years I lived here.
And so these were all co-writes you were doing. Were they mostly for other artists?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was weird at the time because I really was passionate about doing my thing, but I was like, you know, I'm going to put that on the back burner and I'm going to write for other people because it'll be an easier way for me to get my name out there. And in some ways it was because people started recognizing me. I used to wear these big glasses and they're kind of hard to forget.
Yeah, I know. So, I think I've seen the pictures. They're really cute. But they're actual glasses, not sunglasses, right?
They are actual
I like that.
Glasses that have no lenses.
That's beautiful.
Yes. Thank you. But yeah, so it was great because I got to meet a bunch of people. And then through that process, sifting out like, okay, like I want to write with you and I don't want to write with you. Or like this works and this doesn't work. And I just kind of got into the industry that way. And I don't regret it. But, you know, after a couple years of doing that, three and a half years of doing that, I was like, oh, like my soul is just screaming. Like I need to do my own stuff.
So at that point you started... doing just co do you when you write for yourself, do you do co-writes or is it mostly you writing both. Solo? Okay.
Both. It depends.
So at that point you're like, I need to start putting out my own music.
I did, and I did an EP a couple of years ago and I put it out and it was acoustic and it was cool.
A cool stick.
It was cool. But it was, I mean, you know, I couldn't find the right producer for it, so I was just like, screw it, I'm just gonna put out an acoustic EP. And then that kind of tied me over until about a year ago and I was like, okay, I need to start working on my stuff.
So what was the breaking point a year ago?
I think just being in the room with people who didn't know artistically what they wanted. They just wanted to be famous.
And that's the people you were co-writing
some
with?
Some people.
Or people you were writing for sometimes?
People I was co-writing with sometimes. Right. And I was just so frustrated because I was like, I really actually have something to say. And I really actually want to write a record and put it out there so people can hear my voice. So I did that.
So is that where Habit came from?
Habit was on the acoustic EP and it used to be called, Xanax, a Love Song.
Okay. I think I saw that cause I was confused. I'm like, which one is it? Maybe it's both.
Yeah. It's the same song. And so I released that on my acoustic EP and I actually released a video for it on YouTube, with this amazing director that I worked with. And
okay, let's talk about that video for a minute.
Sure.
So this song is incredible.
Thank you.
It's not only a great pop song, but it's got great lyrics as well. But I was trying to follow along with the video. So could you take us through the storyline of it a little bit?
Sure. So I wrote that song, obviously, about myself.
Right.
I started getting panic attacks when I was 8 years old and struggled with them my whole life. And it was really hard for me to go to Berkeley because I was just so scared of being away from home, because mm-hmm. home is like my safe place. So the song was about, obviously it's about Xanax, but the girl represents Xanax, and she represents like the hope and like the feeling of peace that she's giving every person that she's hitting. Mm. Right. So it's like, you go through all of these things in your life, whether you're in an abusive relationship or whether you're homeless or, you know, you're on drugs or whatever, but there's still always a light at the end of the tunnel. And so she was Xanax personified in the video. And that song was probably like one of the most personal songs I've written to that point. But a year later, I was in a session with Rain Man, and we were kind of just messing around. And
Rain Man's a producer?
Yeah, DJ producer. Okay. And we were messing around with some stuff, and I was like, can I just play you this song? And he loved it. He absolutely loved it, and he was like, can you send me the acapella? And it took a year after that for it to finally be finished, but then it was released on Dimmac. And
that's a label?
It's a dance label, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then we got on Billboard, so I mean, it's been a pretty good year.
It was huge. Okay, that song has almost 2 million views.
Yeah.
And so it got remixed a couple times too. I'm always curious, how does that take place? Does someone reach out to you and say, hey, I want to remix it, or do they just go for it?
They go through the label.
Okay.
So Dimmac handled all of that, and then they chose the people that they wanted to remix it. And T-Mass actually did a remix of that song that was getting a lot of airplay on SiriusXM.
Nice.
So it was really cool to hear both versions and like to be on the radio and to be on Billboard. And
do you care when it's taken in a different direction, or as long as people are hearing it, you're good?
I think it's important to, and I wasn't always like this, but I think it's important to give other creative people creative freedom, because when they're able to express themselves and you're able to give them the freedom to do that, then great things come from it. And so I kind of stopped micromanaging my music this time around, like starting with Under My Skin. And I'm just like, okay, why don't you just do what you feel? Obviously, if there are some things I want to change, we can talk about it. But for the most part, I feel like that's how you choose people that you want to work with, because you trust in them enough and you believe in their creativity to let them do what they want.
So since you've loosened the reins a little bit and kind of let other people in creatively, how have you seen yourself expand as an artist and even just like popularity wise?
I'm a lot less stressed, which is great. And I feel like the final product it comes easier and it's better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just developing the relationships with the creative people that I'm working with on my project, like the producer for Under My Skin, Bert Elliott, and I are really good friends. And he kind of encouraged me to start my new project called Youngs. He's mm-hmm. like, you need to get rid of your first name. Keep your last name. We'll start working on stuff. And so that was the first song that I did with him for this project. And then Jan Perchuk
mixed and mastered it. I love Jan. I love the name. Jan.
So but he did a great job. So I have a bunch of really talented people around me. And then my friend Breezy Baldwin did the video. And obviously Laganja was in it. And so it was just a team effort.
And speaking of that, because there's so many different components, right? And especially being an indie artist, we were just talking about this. I'm like, I want to get you a really good publicist, because your stuff is blowing up by itself. But if you had like someone else on your team, it'd be like blowing up.
Like double blowing up.
Double blow. Double blow. But when you're an indie artist, what kind of team are you looking to put together? And like, what do you think is essential to take someone from like putting out really great music, but it's not getting heard as much as it could, to like reaching the ears that it's supposed to?
I mean, I'm kind of working through that right now. I think it starts with a great creative team. And mm-hmm. then once you have the product, I honestly feel like it's just taking the time yourself to submit to blogs mm-hmm. and to be proactive and to reach out to all of your friends and do that. And obviously there are paid services that you can go through to get your music out there. But I also think there's something to be said for people respecting you as a songwriter and knowing that, you know, you've had a history of putting out really good songs, and I think they're more apt to listen to your music once it comes out. PR I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yes and no. If you have the budget, then yeah. I mean, ideally, it's great if you get, like, radio play. Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely something you can do as an indie artist. It's just, again, who you know.
Right. And
I mean, that's how I'm here right now with you.
Yeah, that's right.
So, everyone, here's Lauren's address at home. Yes. And telephone number and email.
Please, reach out. Call.
Reach out and touch her.
Fax me. Just kidding. I don't have a fax. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. I'm glad you said that because I was telling you on my way here, I met somebody and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm in the music business, blah, blah, blah. And we exchanged information. But I'm like, well, I always think that whoever I meet is probably going to either murder me or try to rape me.
Or molest you.
Or molest. Yeah. Yes. Molest. I don't know why I said it like that. That was really weird.
Murder you or molest
you. Molest you. It sounds like a mole. Like a little animal, a creature.
Like a cuddle.
Yeah, it kind of sounds nice.
Yeah.
Let's not make it sound nice.
It doesn't.
So what is the worst situation you've ever been in and how did you get out of it in that kind of way? Like, have you ever gotten in a really creepy situation with a guy in the music business or a girl and how'd you get out of it? You can disguise the names. Don't tell any names, but...
No, people don't really try to molest me.
What?
They don't.
I wouldn't.
I thank you. You're so I actually welcome. Could someone please try like I would love
I'm
that.
I'm starting to get discouraged.
I honestly think it's because I act like not that I'm a bitch, but I'm really strong and people mm-hmm. just don't, you know, mess with me.
Is that the key?
I don't know.
How do you approach it then? Like if you're starting to get creepy vibes from a person,
I just joke what about it.
Oh, you're oh, you're being weird now. That's cool.
Yeah, I just joke about it, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And, like, usually it just kind of softens people up, and they're like, oh, she's, like, my sister.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just kind of, like, call their bluff, but, like, it hasn't happened that often. I've had some weird sessions where I'm, like, in a room, and that people are just smoking so much weed, and, like, the higher they get, and the more, like, you know, I'm just like, I don't want to be here.
So
not that there's anything wrong with weed.
No.
I don't partake, but, I mean, I'm fine with it. It's just funny, like... Some people just can't handle it when they work. And it's like, bro, come on. Come on. I'm like, well, you're wasting my time.
Yeah.
Wasting my time. Time is ticking.
Well, what do you do in that situation?
I leave.
You leave.
Now I leave. Before I felt like I needed to stay, you know, the first couple years I was here, I felt obligated to stay and finish the session. But now if I'm not feeling it or whatever, I'll just be like, you know, I have to go buy tampons.
Yeah. Big ones.
Have to leave.
Super plus.
I have to go do something. I have to poop. I have to do something that you don't want to think about. Okay, bye.
It probably really freaks them out because they're high.
Okay. Yeah, think about that.
Oh, my God. Wait, okay, another question. So if you're in a session, are they usually – I think a lot of the ones you do at this point are in the studio, but when you're going to, like, someone's house, how do you prepare yourself for that? Because – I'm always afraid of the murder.
Oh, I usually go with somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't usually go by myself, but if I do, I know them or they know someone I know and it's not really that weird.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, bring pepper spray.
These are good tips for really any young women listening, not just in the music industry.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even with dating apps, you have to be careful.
Well, I always, if I'm going somewhere and I feel weird about it, like...
Text the address.
First of all, if you're going somewhere and you feel weird about it, you probably shouldn't be going.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, yeah, I've texted addresses before and been like, if I'm not out in an hour, like, come get me.
Yeah.
Because I'm needing help.
I'm needing help. I might be being molested.
Yeah. I'm needing a lot of help.
Oh, I'm needing help. So let's talk a little bit more about Under My Skin because I know we've referenced it
is
a lot.
Is it Under Your Skin?
It is. Mm. It
feels
is.
Good, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I feel at one with your song.
Thank you.
Tell me about what caused you to need to get this song out of your body. Into mine.
I put it into yours.
Yes.
It's funny. I have this ongoing joke with my ex. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, can you be mean to me? Because I really need to be creative. Like, can you do something that, like, really hurts me so I can write something? And a lot of my songs have been about him,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Like, it's great because I guess you could say he inspires me.
He's your muse.
He is my muse. And so keep breaking my heart. No. But yeah, I wrote that song with my friend Robin Gosh, who also went to Berkeley. He lived out here for a while. He's back in Nashville. And we wrote it together at his house in probably 45 minutes. And he had this little microphone that he handed me, and I was laying on the floor because I was lazy, and also because I was just like, I just need to lay on the floor. And I sang. So the vocals that you hear were that take. It was that one take of me lying on the floor, holding the microphone, and singing. And I was going to recut it, and I was like, it just felt too honest. So it's just about, you know, being so, not obsessed, but so involved in someone. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you do, you can't stop thinking about them. And I wake up still with a lot of anxiety, especially when things aren't going right in my life or I'm at odds with someone. And so it was that feeling. And every time I sing that song, I picture myself lying on a hospital bed. So one of the lyrics is, I'll take another shot to forget you. It's not like a shot. It's like a shot of people like giving me like some kind of medicine to like take the pain away, because it was just so intense. But sometimes that happens, you know, you meet somebody and you just, it's hard to let go.
Oh, I know.
So if you're out there, come here. If you're watching this, I still love you.
Aww. Do you typically tell the person when the song's about them?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
What I usually do is wait till we hang out, and then I get in their car and I'm like, hey, you want to hear this song? I wrote it about you. It's great. I've written so many songs like that and played it for him. I'm like, listen to this one. And he's like,
what does he say?
He just kind of laughs.
Yeah.
And he's like,
well, you know what, though? I think that's nice. I mean, I don't think it's nice that he caused you to feel that way, that you had to write songs that are that gut-wrenching. But I think it is nice in a way, because, I mean, it's helping other people. But I also think that he reacts that way instead of being like, wait, I didn't do that. Shows how much he supports you as an artist.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
100%. Literally is one of my biggest fans.
Yeah.
And that's what, I mean, we're still good.
Yeah. Yeah, when someone's inspired you that much, you have to.
I mean, we'd be better if he started sending me, like, checks. With cash.
Hey, could I have a
I could forget about all that other stuff a lot.
Pain and suffering, baby.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, when you date someone for a long time, you don't get any retribution.
Yeah, could I have some cash?
Please.
You know, to go shopping.
Just a few dollars.
Or more.
Maybe $7 million.
Yeah, also that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
So, Krista, I was wondering, because yes, you've Lauren. Done so many different amazing things. So versatile.
Oh, thank
this
you.
Young one. Thank this you. Young's one. What is your ultimate goal? Like, if you could whisper into the ear of God, what would you say?
God, please help me do this, God. I would say, God, I want nothing more than to make music that touches people and that pays me. Because that's important, and people have a lot of like money shame, and I think it's you. Honestly, getting paid for what I do just equates success to me. Like, oh, well, people care.
Well, that's how it's the energy exchange in our society works.
Yeah,
it's just an energy exchange.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So songs that touch people that are worth something, and also I want to continue writing for artists, because I do enjoy writing for artists, especially when we're creating something again that's meaningful. And you always know when you're writing something and there's soul in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just would love Sia's career. Yeah. She's like my idol. I love her.
Have you met her?
I have not, but I want to.
I feel you will.
I think I will.
Yeah.
I just want to give her a hug. I don't even need to say anything. I just want to be like, for like, but a long one.
Long one.
At least a minute.
She's going to love it.
Like, pat her head a little bit, just like, get, you know,
just a gentle pat the top of the head.
Yeah,
nothing going on here, just a gentle pat on Sia's head.
Yeah, that's what I want.
I think that's very doable, and I think your success is and is going to be so much richer because you have this huge story behind it now.
Yeah,
you know, you had to go through all those struggles in order to get where you are today and to really impact people, because most people don't have that straight line to success. It's usually a curvy road.
I mean, it's been a journey.
Yeah.
I'm an only child.
Me too.
Dealt with a lot of stuff growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I love my parents. I do. But there was a lot of dysfunction in the house. Mm-hmm. And in order to escape from that, again, very cliche, I wrote.
Right.
And I played. And I also ran away. I also stole the car when I was 13. But, you know.
Ooh.
Did those things too.
You're advanced.
Also smoked a lot of cigarettes when I was in high school. I did.
Wow.
Yeah. I got high when I was 13 behind McDonald's after 8th grade.
You're so bad. That's what I would have said when I was 13. I was like, there's so many bad kids at this school.
I was bad, but I was also very good.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know what I mean? Because then, like, I would tell my parents. So
I would do that too. I mean, I never ever did anything bad as a kid.
Really?
But I didn't.
You waited till last year. You still haven't done anything bad, have you?
I mean, I've smoked pot, I've drank, and I've had sex. Spoiler alert, sorry.
We need to hang out more.
Yeah, but I haven't done anything worse than that, really.
I mean, me either.
Yeah.
Yeah, besides steal the car.
Yeah.
In the rain. Who the hell steals the car when it's raining, so then when I drive it back into the garage, I have to wipe it down?
Wow, that does suck. I didn't think about that. I would have just gotten in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Well, at least you had the foresight.
Yeah, they never found out.
Even now?
Even, I don't think
I'm going to send them this video.
You should. I think they might be watching. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Hi, parents. We love you.
No, but here's the thing. My father taught me how to drive when I was 4. He put me on his lap, and I started steering at 4. I might have been 2. Maybe 4. And then when I was 12 or 11, no, I was like 11, I would drive down the highway with him, like up north, you know?
Up north.
Up north. And he would be like, sit up straight, Krista. We don't want the cops thinking you're 11. And my mom would be pissing her pants in the backseat. And my dad would just like, this was after he had like 2 beers, 3 beers. He'd just pass out, go to sleep.
And you were driving?
And I was just driving down the road. So when I stole the car, I knew what I was doing.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
So it's okay.
Yeah, no. If I had had that experience, I probably would have tried to drive it myself too. Because like, why am I going to do it when my parents are in the backseat when I can just have a joyride by myself?
At 13.
Yes.
Right.
You're very advanced.
I try.
So before we go, I want to do a quick rapid fire because I know you have so much knowledge when it comes to music business, and I always like to give the listeners some sort of takeaway.
Little tidbits. Okay.
So you were talking earlier about how people are so afraid of asking for money to be paid for the art that they do.
Yes.
So can you go into just small details? You don't have to do anything crazy specific, but like, how do you as a songwriter get paid?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways. Mm-hmm. So I usually go, I have the 3P policy. Okay. So I either do things for pleasure, politics, or pay. So you have to first decide what a certain project is for you. Mm-hmm. And then if it's a pay project, then there's a lot of different ways to get paid. I charge upfront. For sessions, I have like a day rate, mm-hmm. or I have like a day rate plus a vocal fee. Or, you know, if I'm working with a producer and a writer and, for instance, this just happened, I got a placement for, a song that we wrote together and I said, you know, tell me what your track fee is and then tack on an extra 30% to that track fee so I can pay out the other writer and myself. I think you just have to be really creative.
So who are you saying that to? The producer?
Yes.
Okay.
So when the producer approaches the label and says, you know, my track fee is X amount of money. Excuse me. That will include the writer's fee.
Mm.
Because then everybody wins, right?
Right.
Because it takes 18 months to get paid. Royalties on the back end. And sometimes you don't know if you like how much that's going to be. So I think it's important to show that you value the top liners and the songwriters in the room because 9 times out of 10, they're the ones doing the vocals too.
Yes. Very true.
So you just got to get creative because the music industry is kind of like, people are trying to maneuver it right now.
Yeah. I think the music industry is trying to decide who it will be,
right?
You know? And so it's interesting that while it's finding its voice, you kind of have to figure out how you can make your mark.
Right. Make your money.
Yeah.
How you can survive. I mean, mm-hmm. I do this. I don't do anything else but music.
Yeah.
So, and I'm very
lucky. Oh my gosh. Can we talk really quickly about K-pop?
Absolutely.
Tell me how you got involved in that and tell me what that world is like.
I don't remember how I met my friend Alex in Korea, but we started talking. I think it was through my friend Melanie. And I got my first cut through him and then another cut through him. And then I met it's kind of like when you start paying attention to those things, other opportunities come just because mm-hmm. law of attraction. And then I linked up with this other company and then, you know, I got a placement on Tan's last record with Maya. And that was through SM. So mm-hmm. it's just kind of been, I just say it's the law of attraction. You know, if you want something, you put it out there and then you just start seeing it everywhere and things come to you.
But like when you're going to write a K-pop song, what is your mindset? Is it different than when you're writing a pop song?
Sometimes I've gotten songs placed in Korea, just songs that I wrote before. Not thinking that they were going to be placed in Korea. But sometimes it's like, they like a lot of melodies. Mm. They like a lot. So like, if you think that like American pop has, just like add 10 more. Wow. Do you know what I mean?
So it's like Sparkle Town.
They love that. It's like
Sparkle Town. Yes. K-pop. I love it.
Yeah. So it's just add more.
Add more.
If you think it's too much, add more.
All right. Mm-hmm. A little something something there.
Yeah.
Is there one piece of advice you would give a young songwriter who is about to embark upon their professional career?
Yes.
One thing you'd wish you'd known?
Well, I did know.
Okay, well then,
but go ahead. The best piece of advice my father ever gave me was when I moved to LA, he said to me, Krista, this is not your territory, so keep your head down, your mouth shut, and work hard because you never know who knows who. And it's so true. If you piss one person off, you're not pissing one person off. You're pissing like 10 people off. So just be really careful. Be careful, folks.
So how, one more question to tack onto that. How then do you stand up for yourself and simultaneously not piss people off? Because that in and of itself, setting boundaries does piss people off.
Well, sometimes, but when you're doing it in a genuine way and you're doing it in an adult fashion, it's a lot different than, you know, going off on someone or, you know, cursing them out or making their life difficult. Do you know, like if you're really, if you're a difficult person to work with, people aren't going to work with you. I've literally been, I've worked with people before and they were such a headache that I'm like, you're so talented, but I will never work with you again because you make my life harder. My life is already hard. Don't make my life harder.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yep.
Don't make her life harder. You're not going to work with her. You're definitely not going to molest her if that happens.
You're definitely not going to molest me.
But you know what you should do? You should go get her single, Under My Skin. It's available on all streaming platforms,
it
correct?
It is, and then it'll get under your skin and your skin.
It will.
And your
skin. It's already under mine.
Yes.
And it's on YouTube as well, so you got to check out that video with the sexy golden dancer man, Laganja Estranja. Is that correct?
It's true.
Check out Krista's website, KristaYoungs.com. She's on Instagram at ThisIsYoungs and at KristaYoungs. And I'm really excited.
I'm really excited, too. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
It's so much fun.
We have to do this again.
We should totally do this again.
We
got to
do a deep dive next time.
I'm in.
I'm in. I'm in the pool of life. Thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. My name is Lauren LaGrasso. You can find me at Lauren LaGrasso on pretty much all the platforms except for Snapchat. I'm at LoloLogro. So three lows make your garden grow. Thank you for tuning in. God bless America.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.